नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयामुदीरयेत् नस्तप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भागवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी. This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 29, entitled Talks Between Narada and King Prachinabarhi. Text number 53. Kshudram charam sumanasham sharane mithitva antam prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdaka vana bhinnam kshudram charam sumanasam sharane mithitva. Kshudram charam sumanasam sharane mithitva. Raktam shadangri ganasam sulubdha karnam. Kshudram charam sumanasam sharane mithitva. Kshudram charam sumanasam sharane mithitva. Raktam shadangri ganasam sulubdha karnam. Raktam shadangri ganasam sulubdha karnam. Agre vikana sutripo viganaya yantam. Agre vikana sutripo viganaya yantam. Search out that deer who is engaged in eating grass in a very nice flower garden along with his wife. That deer is very much attached to his business, and he is enjoying the sweet singing of the bumblebees in his garden. Just try to understand his position. He is unaware that before him is a tiger, which is accustomed to living at the cost of another's flesh. Behind the deer is a hunter, who is threatening to pierce him with sharp arrows. Thus the deer's death is imminent. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Here is an allegory in which the king is advised to find a deer that is always in a dangerous position. Although threatened from all sides, the deer simply eats grass in a nice flower garden, unaware of the danger all around him. All living entities, especially human beings, think themselves very happy in the midst of families, as if living in a flower garden and hearing the sweet humming of bumblebees. Everyone is centered around his wife, who is the beauty of family life. The bumblebees' humming may be compared to the talk of children. The human being, just like the deer, enjoys his family without knowledge that before him is the factor of time, which is represented by the tiger. The fruitive activities of a living entity simply create another dangerous position and oblige him to accept different types of bodies. for a deer to run after a mirage of water in the desert is not unusual. The deer is also very fond of sex. The conclusion is that one who lives like a deer will be killed in due course of time. Vedic literature is therefore advised that we should understand our constitutional position and take to devotional service before death comes, according to the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 9th verse, 9th chapter, 29th verse. Labdhva sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavante manusyam arthadam anityam apiha dhira purnam yateta napated anumrityu yavan nishreyasaya vishaya kalusarvatasyat. After many births, we have attained this human form. Therefore, before death comes, we should engage ourselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the fulfillment of human life. Shudram charam sumanasam sharanemititva raktam sadangri ganasam sulupta karnam agre vrikana ayayantam prishte mrigam mrigayal dubdaka vana binnam. My dear king, please search out that deer who's engaged in eating grass in a very nice flower garden along with his wife. That deer is very much attached to his business, and he is enjoying the sweet singing of the bumblebees in his garden. Just try to understand his position. He is unaware that before him is a tiger, which is accustomed to living at the cost of another's flesh. Behind the deer is a hunter, who is threatening to pierce him with sharp arrows. Thus, the deer's death is imminent. This is the theme which is presented in all our Vedic scriptures by the arrangement of Maya Devi. We are all put into illusion in this material world. We are eternal. Satchit Ananda, they're full of knowledge and full of bliss. But we are experiencing Asat, Achit, Nirananda, temporary life, full of darkness, ignorance, and constant suffering. So our attachment to this body is the cause of our suffering. And it is all based on a false perception. Just like a man who gets a new car, a nice Mercedes-Benz, or maybe what's a good car over here? Rolls-Royce? You get a new Rolls Royce. And the man becomes very attached to it, thinking that it is mine. And he polishes it very nicely. And he takes his girlfriend for a ride and shows it off to all his friends. A nice new car. And then one day somebody comes along in a 1958, what's that Russian car? Lada. Comes in a 1958 Lada, broken down. And he's a little drunk anyway, driving this way and that way on the road, and smashes right into your car, ruins the whole front end completely, destroyed, nice new shiny car, all crumpled up, So you get very angry and you jump out of your car and you scream, "You hit me! You hit me!" He didn't hit you, he hit your car. But because you're so attached to the car, because you've taken such good care of the car, your mind is transferred into the car. You literally become the car in your mind. So in the same way, this body is simply a bag of mucus, bile, and air, kapha, pitta, vayu. The Srimad Bhagavatam says that anyone who thinks, yasyatma buddhi, anyone whose intelligence is that I am kunape tridhatuke, I am this tridhatu, someone whose intelligence thinks in that way, that I am Finnish, I am Russian, I am Swedish, I am American, I am Indian, I am black, I am white. Someone who has this kind of intelligence and he thinks that his place of birth is worshipable, because that's what happens when you identify with the body. Naturally, your body, because of your ego, is better than all other bodies. And your country, your place of birth, becomes also very worshipable. All Finnish are best. Our nation is best. We do this, we do that. So in this way, a person neglects the advice of saintly persons, yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke svadikalatradishu, thinks that his place of birth, his wife, his children, his home, everything is the best. Kalatradishu boma ijadi yatirtha buddhi salilena karichej janeshva vigyeshu sa eva go khara. Someone who goes to church or goes to a place of pilgrimage, goes to a holy place, simply to take a bath, or in other words, simply as a ritualist, simply as a show of spiritual life, but he doesn't inquire from the learned persons about the meaning of human life. Such a person is no better than a cow or an ass. And the example, of course, is going to a holy place, just like in India we have, of course, Haridwar is there, where people go to take holy bath. Or at the Triveni Sangam in Allahabad, I had personal experience in 1977, one of my friends from Calcutta, because I was the president in Calcutta for some time. So one businessman, on the auspicious day, the full moon day, Amavasya they call, on the Amavasya day of the Kumbh Mela goes for about 1 month, so on the auspicious day, he drove all the way from Calcutta, at least 1,000 miles, and came with his family. They came to Allahabad, and they took their bath, and then they got back in their car and drove all the way back to Calcutta. So I told him, "Mr. Agarwal, Ganges is there in Calcutta. If you just want to take a bath, then why you drove all the way?" Because in the holy places, the cows and the donkeys, they also take bath in the river. So what is the difference between you and them? So those people who avoid the real purpose of coming to a holy place, which is to inquire, atato brahma jigyasa, now, chaurasi lakyoni ke baad, after passing through 8,400,000 species, now is the time to inquire, who am I? What is the purpose of my life? Where am I going? What should I be doing? How can I avoid death? Unfortunately, people are so caught up in pursuing sense gratification, getting facility, because they've made a mistake. They falsely identified the self with the body, and they think that by providing facility for the senses, that this will bring me lasting happiness. But we can see that no one in the past has achieved such happiness. At present, there is abundance of consumer goods, and nobody is happy. In fact, America, or any country, but America is a good example, they have more facilities than anywhere else in the world. More cinemas, more brothels, more nightclubs, more liquor shops, more cinemas. Everything is there. But they also have more crime, more suicide, more drug addiction, more prostitution, more child molestation, more insane asylums than anywhere else in the world. So this is not a sign of a healthy, happy civilization. There's a pinprick somewhere in the social body. People are not happy. So there's something missing. And here, this example given by Narad Muni of a deer that wanders into the desert looking for water. Or here he's giving the example, the deer is engaged in eating grass in a very nice flower garden along with his wife. Animals, they don't have the power of discrimination. Practically speaking, not even allegory, but practically speaking, if you have a couple of deer eating some grass, or a couple of, let's say, goats eating grass, and the farmer comes to take one of the goats for slaughter, if there is sufficient grass there, the other goat will just go on eating. He won't think, where did my friend go? Maybe I'm next. I better get out of here quick. He won't think like that. But he'll just go on eating because he doesn't have that power to intelligence to analyze his situation. So all around us, there is danger. The body is so fragile, and at any moment we could be kicked out. Of course, we're living in a relatively stable country with a relatively peaceful situation. But at any moment, the whole situation could turn upside down, just like in Yugoslavia or Somalia or India. You don't know what time is going to bring. And of course, we don't know. That is, I'm talking about adivotic miseries caused by other living beings in the form of ethnic cleansing or, you know, any, the situation is such that any deranged person could somehow or other seize power by manipulating people and by corruption and bribery, etc., and then exploit all of us and cause great suffering and misery. But even apart from that, just in the normal course of our lives, there's so much danger. At any second, any one of us could be killed. So we're living in a false sense of security. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing this out. Narad Muni is trying to instruct Prachina Barhi that by various kinds of allegories that your false security, it's preventing you from seeing the real urgency, the need. Yo va etad aksharam gargya viditva asmal lokat praiti sa kripana. Kripana means a miserly man, someone who gets the opportunity where he has enough intelligence to discriminate, but he doesn't use that intelligence, where he has enough facility that he can solve the problems of material existence and get free from the cycle of birth and death. If he doesn't take advantage of the opportunity, then he's really a miser. Kripana. Just like if you get something valuable and you hoard it away, you don't utilize it, then you're a miser. So the human life is very valuable. Actually, this body is awarded by nature so that we can fulfill certain responsibilities. It's a facility given by the Lord. So in a job situation, the employees are all given different pay grades, different salaries. The office administrator, he gets a certain salary. The workers, the general staff, they get a certain pay grade. And the office runner, in India they call the peon, he gets another kind of salary. So they all have the same economic problems. They all need a house to stay. They all need food to eat. They all need to provide for their families. They all have the same economic needs, but the company is giving facility for solving those problems to different employees, different facilities to different employees. The reason is that the office administrator, the manager, he has to take so much more responsibility than the peon. The peon spends a lot of his day just dreaming about when he's going to be off work. At 10 to 5, he's, you know, practically out the door. And even during the day, he's in the washroom having a cigarette break or, you know, he's not very concerned with the job. But the manager has to stay not till 5, but till 6 and sometimes 7. And sometimes he takes his work home with him and he has to see that all the other employees are engaged. So naturally, the owner of the company is going to give him more facility so he can live in a little bit better house, have a nicer car, have a padded bank account for his security. So that's nature's arrangement also. Human beings have more intelligence than animals. They can easily solve their economic problems. The animals also have to eat and sleep. They have families. They need a place to take shelter from the elements. But nature has given humans more facility in the form of intelligence that they can dominate all the other living beings and exploit nature and live relatively comfortably. But the reason is that human beings are expected to take more responsibility in the matter of self-realization, to follow the laws of God. And if they don't do that, then there's no point in them having a human form of life. If their only aspiration, their only goal in life is to exploit the senses, exploit material nature for sense gratification, then they might as well have animal bodies, and that's what happens. At the time of death, according to your mental proclivity, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajati ante kalevaram, you'll be transferred. The soul will be transferred to another material body, but this time as an animal, or even lower. According to your karma, you may not deserve even an animal body. Prabhupada said that a yogi can get free, get liberated from the material world by sitting in trance and not acting. He stops all the actions, even the incoming breath. He balances, he checks it against the outgoing breath. In other words, he stops breathing, practically stops all activity. And he waits for his karma, his purva karma, his past karma. He waits for that to, for time to run out. So Prabhupada said that such process is not possible in Kali Yuga practically, just practically, because in one day we commit more sin than it would take 10,000 years to wait out. So, not a practical process. So, therefore, if we don't take to devotional service, if we don't take to purification, we're going to be punished very, very severely for our sinful lives. The Manusmriti, Manusangita mentions that if you kill a cow, for every hair on the back of the cow, you have to take birth and be killed. So, if you go to a restaurant and order a meal, you know, even a few pieces of meat, if one piece of meat is from one cow and one piece of meat is from another cow, and all the hairs on the back of all the cows that you take part in killing, and not only you, the person who cooks it, the person who serves it, the person who transports the meat, the person who sells it, they're all accomplices in the crime. So much karma is there. So it's a very, very dangerous material world that we're living in. And yet we're so, carrying on. We're so jolly and thinking that everything is very nice, listening to the chirping birds and in our nice little garden. And I have my little house and my little wife and my little children, and it's all so nice. And we're, in an illusion for a little while. But an intelligent person will not be so bewildered. Actually, it all begins from sex life, unfortunately. Because sex life rivets the mind into the body. We're trying to get free from the shackles the chains of the body, but this sex pleasure, which is the most difficult thing to free the mind from attachment to, it's also the source, ultimately, of our greatest suffering, misery. It makes us attached to the body. So we practice celibacy so that we can be free from, ultimately free, and ultimately enjoy the highest kind of pleasure. So that is tapasya. Tapasa brahmacharyena samena cha dhamena cha tyagena satya sotya bhyam yamena niyamena va. All of these rules and regulations, including celibacy, these are part of our tapasya or austerity. In the beginning, that's spiritual happiness. Yat tadagre vishamiva pariname mritopamam tatsukam satvikam proktam atma buddhi prasada jam. It's happiness in the mode of goodness, and it leads you on the path of self-realization. And in the beginning, it's difficult to do. It's not easy to control the senses. The society, the civilization that we're living in is not, these things are not very much appreciated. People don't know what is this celibacy. They think it's some kind of demoniac self-denial, and they think that how can you enjoy life? I remember when I had joined ISKCON in the first few months, we used to go on Harinam, but we didn't have any cars, so we had to hitchhike back to the temple. So once I got picked up by a truck driver, and truck drivers are not known for their pious living. So this truck driver was pretty surprised to see me in my dhoti and kurta and shaved head. So, you know, he was asking me various questions what I was doing. And when I explained to him that we didn't have any illicit sex life, that we were celibate, he was shocked. He said, I don't believe it. I can't be. It's impossible. How do you enjoy life? How do you live? You must be doing something. Must be at least, you know, artificially having sex. So he couldn't understand, because for him, all of his life depended upon intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. But such people don't realize what they're doing. Sex life is, one poet compared it to drinking one's own blood. This is interesting phenomena. In India, you see all of the examples which are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. You see them right there before you. In Bombay, we have a beautiful temple I mentioned. There's a big wall, compound wall around the temple. So just outside the compound wall, there are big trees. And some of the trees are thorny trees. They have just sharp thorns on the leaves of the trees. So every morning, well, Juhu Beach is very close. It's only a couple of 100 yards from our temple. We're in a residential area, but just, you can see the beach practically from the roof of the temple. So along the beach during the day and in the evening, there are many tourists who come there, And in order to exploit the tourists, there are some businessmen who ply the beaches with camel carts. And you get to go and take your children and go on a little camel ride, sitting in the camel cart. So in the morning, the trainers who maintain the camels, they bring their camels along the road towards the beach, coming past our temple. So I have seen, literally, the camels love to stop on their way to the beach. They love to forcefully pull their trainers and stop, and they eat the thorny bushes. They love to eat those thorny bushes with the prickles that will... What happens is the thorny bushes, they eat them, and the thorns cut the tongue of the camel, and their own blood oozes out, and it mixes with the thorns and makes a kind of chutney, and then they enjoy that, eating that. So they're drinking their own blood and thinking, very nice, very tasty. So our bodily fluids, both men and women, they lose their bodily fluids, ojas, which gives vitality to the body. In the act of sex life, the bodily fluids, including semen, are lost, and it saps your vitality. It drains virtually your intelligence, because, among other things, zinc, which is linked to the brain, to the process of thinking, whatever. Much zinc is lost. And, of course, again, there's a little pleasure there, intense pleasure for a few moments, but you suffer so much for that because your mind gets very much attached to enjoying through the body, rather than enjoying on a higher level through service to God. There is pleasure. There's pleasure on every level. There's pleasure in the modes of ignorance. There's pleasure in the modes of passion. And there's pleasure in the modes of goodness. It's just a question of how you direct your lives. It's just a question of what you become accustomed to, what you practice or cultivate. If you cultivate drinking after shave lotion, some winos, they're so poor, alcoholics, sometimes it's cheaper than buying wine. The cheapest kind of alcohol you can buy is, you know, after shave lotion. So they actually, literally, they drink that and get drunk because they just want to have a thrill, any cheap thrill. And they become accustomed to that. Pigs become accustomed to eating stool. No, if I offer you a plate of stool and say it's very nice food, certified by all pigs, please take some. You see, you won't enjoy it because you haven't cultivated that taste. If I give you a plate of thorns and say, nice chutney here, you take some, you won't enjoy it. But the camels enjoy it very nicely because they have cultivated that taste. So it's all a question of where you direct. You can enjoy. Devotional life is susukam kartumavyayam. It's a joyful life. But it is within the laws of God, dharma viruddha. So therefore, we make progress in spiritual life in the mode of goodness. So, better to get out of the false garden. Punksa striya mithuni bhavam etat tayor mito hridaya grantim ahu atho griha chetra suta apta vitayar janasyamoho yamahamameti. It's nicely explained in the Bhagavatam. Everything begins from this punksa striya. So one becomes attached and his illusions increase. But here, Nard Muni, he's always, his business is just bursting the bubble of illusion. He goes around and, he's always encouraging kings to give up their duties and to practice, to go to the forest and practice rigid austerities. And he's not very much the friend of the progenitors of the universe. He's always making enemies with Daksha and even Brahma in some cases. But Srila Prabhupada has given us a nice life where we can even enter into family life, but under strict regulation. If we go beyond the regulations, our sadhana, our vaidhi, then we're also entering into dangerous life. If we choose family life, that's all right. It's not a disgrace. It's a proper Vaishnava institution. Most of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were grihasthas. But if we break the rules, if we do it foolishly, without careful meditation and planning and vows and strictness, then there'll be no shelter there either. The way to be both in the world and not of the world, the way to be like a lotus flower, naivam papam avapshasi, not to incur any sin, is to try to become equanimical, sukha dukhe same kritva, labha labhau jaya jayau tato yudhaya yujasva naivam papam avapshasi. And the only way to do that is by regulation and by following the rules of spiritual life. Otherwise, better to just be naishtika brahmachari that is the safest path. That is the safest path, to just be a strict follower. But if one cannot be so strict like we were reading yesterday, then you take up another path, but at least follow the rules and regulations. Okay, I have to, I'm getting late, I'm taking up all the time in Bhagavatam, but, okay, are there any questions? Yes. We're very unfortunate. We come from the lowest, we have no, what they call in India, sanskar. If you study, probably many of the devotees in ISKCON come from broken families. Even otherwise, 50-60% of the public broken marriages. So we don't know how to establish proper relationships even. We haven't had a proper family upbringing. We have so many sexual fantasies, and we've been conditioned by movies, by television, by modern advertising. We're bombarded with stimuli from the environment, the atmosphere that we live in. It's a hellish situation, and devotees enter into family life expecting a false thing, that here's a chance to exploit the senses. Now I've been fasting and now I'm going to have a feast. But that's an illusion. There are some women and some men both who maybe lose their whatever. There are some women who come to Krishna consciousness who actually want to go back home, back to Godhead. They want to get out of the material world where they're exploited and treated like a sex machine. And, you know, they may enter into a family life as an obligation, as a duty, and also to serve Krishna by producing God-conscious children. But if some brahmachari thinks that here's an opportunity for me to enjoy my senses, he's mistaken. It's family life is a great responsibility, and it's a very difficult responsibility also, because you're not only dealing with your own problems, mental problems and psychological problems, your physical problems, but all of a sudden you have a family to deal with and all the problems there. So one has to be very, very careful, and there has not been enough seriousness. And in fact, if you're going to get married and have children and then take that responsibility loosely, I say that it's worse than abortion, because you kill the children slowly rather than quickly. Better you have an abortion than do that nonsense. And it is a great disgrace to your spiritual master, and because you kill the children slowly rather than quickly. Better you have an abortion than do that nonsense. And it is a great disgrace to your spiritual master, and it's demoniac. If you can't be a yogi and control your senses, obviously there's going to be problems in family life. Obviously there's going to be in family life. Obviously there's going to be fighting. Obviously there's going to be a clash of egos. That's what family life is about, but that's the price you pay for a little sex life. And you have to tolerate those problems in family life. You have to be steady. You're not going to become happy by accepting responsibility and then rejecting it. But what can we do? We're from such fallen condition. We have, you know, what can I say? Everything's so bad. But we have to try. We have to keep trying. That's also there. Prabhupada was disgusted as early as 1972. He said, I'm not going to sanction any more marriages. I'm just disgusted by these hogs and dogs in the form of human beings. He said, trying to convert Westerners, trying to purify malechas is like trying to wash coal. Not so easy to wash coal. But he didn't give up. He was always, even in the end, he said he was very pleased with his disciples. The most important thing is that we should sincerely try. Even if we fall short, we have to get up and keep trying, keep struggling. Devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, what makes you happy? And he said, I'm happy when I see you struggle. Because you have to struggle in the material world. So better you struggle to become Krishna conscious. Yome bhakta prayachati. So we have to try our best, and Krishna will help us. And even if we fall short, Krishna says, Sudhuracharo, even the most fallen person, Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak, if he's trying to become my devotees, my devotee, then he will be blessed. So both men and women should realize that neither of them are perfect. Neither we are perfect husbands, nor the women are perfect wives. And a lot of problems are there. So you can't expect, an idyllic situation. But we have to just keep focused on Krishna and be steady. It's not like everybody cannot expect to get the perfect wife or the perfect husband. There's only one or two of those around. The rest of us are just a bunch of schmucks, but we have to settle for that and try to focus. If you focus on Krishna, if you focus on Krishna as a brahmachari, if you focus on Krishna as a householder, the most important thing is yoga, our practice to become Krishna conscious. These other things are just secondary to make us a little peaceful. We need to gratify our senses a little bit, so to keep us a little peaceful so we can pursue bhakti yoga, we make all these compromises. We have. Otherwise, yogis generally only ate a little bit of food. Even it was prasadam, but very little. But here you find we have big feasts and eat one plate, two plates, three plates, and that's our bhakti yoga. So, the big dispensation has been made for us.